time for breaking news, expert insight, and informed commentary on what's happening in Springfield, Chicago, and beyond. Because an informed citizenry is the only way to protect our republic. It's time for The Real Story with Jeannie Ives and Amy Jacobson.
The master negotiator wins again. Good morning. Welcome back to The Real Story with Jeannie Ives and Amy Jacobson. Yesterday I said I don't like Trump's Truth Social, where he said he wanted to destroy the entire culture, that he was going to attack bridges and he was going to attack power plants.
Are people finally waking up that he says a lot, but entirely does something different?
It worked, but there are a lot of people, including a very strong ally of President Trump, Senator Ron Johnson, who was in my camp.
I am hoping and praying that President Trump is bluster. I do not want to see us start blowing up civilian infrastructure. I do not want to see that. We are not at war with the Iranian people. You know, we are trying to liberate them.
It was a baller move, well, I got to admit. And when I got back in my car last night, I was keeping my fingers crossed, like, oh, please. When I heard that there was a ceasefire and we got what we wanted so far, I smiled. I was happy. I wasn't one of the Democrats who's like, darn it, I wanted those bridges with those innocent civilians on them to blow up.
Look, I'm not one of those Democrats either, but I totally want them to build to blow up bridges until this is like completed.
God, hang them high, Ives.
Woo. No. I mean, look, people obviously have not studied military history much, but at General Kane, they had a big press briefing today with Secretary of War Hegseth and General Kane, Joint Chiefs of Staff head, and here's what he said about that ceasefire.
Over the course of 38 days of major combat operation, the joint force achieved the military objectives as defined by the president. We welcome the ongoing ceasefire, and as the secretary said, we hope that Iran chooses a lasting peace. But as Secretary Hegseth said, let us be clear, a ceasefire is a pause, and the joint force remains ready if ordered or called upon to resume combat operations with the same speed and precision as we've demonstrated over the last 38 days, and we hope that that is not the case.
Well, it didn't take very long for that ceasefire to not be held by Iran, but they essentially fired cluster bombs at Israel. Now they're saying though that that's not part of the ceasefire. The ceasefire is just with American forces in American areas
and not with Israel too. I thought it was us. And
well, and Israel's going after the Hezbollah. But I mean, here is somebody who's much more informed about this and has a really good sense about what's going on. It's Lieutenant Colonel Sarjis Sangari, U.S. Army, retired. He's a 20-year veteran of the United States Army Infantry and Special Operations Forces. He himself did go through SERE training. He may want to talk to us about that. Mm-hmm. But I talked to Sarjis immediately after this, or I texted with him, and he asked him to come on the show to give a little bit of a response. And of course, what's important here too is that Sarjis is Iranian and he's Persian and he actually was born in Iran. And so he joins us now about this topic. Sarjis, thanks so much for joining us.
It's good to be here, ladies.
Yeah, I also wanted to mention that you are the CEO of the Near East Center for Strategic Engagement. You follow this stuff very closely. You have your own contacts and everything else. And when I said, hey, look, they're already firing again. You said they're not firing at us. They need to show their people some face-saving ability before they take to the streets. Most likely, and over the next few weeks, they will take to the streets and demand changes. And the ones we have negotiated with will give them the changes they're asking for. If it goes well, Trump will extend the ceasefire until the people are okay with the new government. And then, as I have stated, by the end of April, plus or minus a week, this will be done. Do you still stand by that? What's going on?
Yeah, I stand by it. I was born in Iran. I'm an Assyrian Christian from Iran, of course. With that said, I'll just simplify. I'll go over a note that I had shared with a friend of mine who said, no, United States lost here. There's a lot of people who are against even how Trump approached it. And I basically told him that the Iranian spokesperson, okay, for the new Iranian leadership, who, just like other leaders in Iran, know they are alive because of the American choosing, conducted a press conference just an hour and a half before the ceasefire and stated that Iran will never agree to a ceasefire in response to the question that was asked by his handpicked reporter. An hour and a half later, Iran agreed to the ceasefire because they knew that if they did not do so, everything would end in Iran. And it wasn't bolster, it was a direct threat to the Iranians from the photos. Not that the current regime has a difficult internal issue politically to deal with, because as the opposition starts taking to the streets, if they come out to the streets, because the ceasefire has been initiated now over the next few weeks, is going to have to answer to those other hardliners that were supporting them, okay, that were told to go stand on bridges, sacrifice your sons and daughters, yourself, and your family, and die if need be to protect the bridges and the other locations that the regimes needed to survive, as to why the current leadership took a knee to the great Satan. They literally came to the knee to the great Satan. Now, that internal political grenade that Trump tossed into the lap of the hardliners in Iran cannot be cleaned up. They're just not going to be able to clean it up. And it will finally lead to further changes in the internal policies if and when people in the region, both opposition and hardliners and our American public, understands that. If that happens, then great. If it doesn't, guess what? There's a ceasefire if you go back to war. And I think that's one of the things that people are just not understanding it. The change that has been taking place in that region and the ability to give the Iranians an ability now to have a say in their government, with the fact that their government knows that they could die at any given time if they do not listen to the people and the American policymakers under the current regime, then that's something that nobody else could have brought to bear. And I don't think there was anybody else who could have been a conduit for that type of a change in the region, except for the current POTUS and the current, administration.
Well, the Ayatollah who was assassinated, we keep hearing that his son, that he didn't want to be in that position in the first place. He may be gay, he may be not, don't really care about that, but that he's unconscious, that he was injured in one of the first strikes. Do you know anything about that?
He was injured, you know. I mean, it's up to the Russian doctors what they want to do as far as how to take care of him and the Iranians. But in the long term, for the rest of his lifetime, he knows that at any given time, he could die. And all these individuals, regardless who these leaders are, people say, oh, they're hardliners. They all know that it can die at any moment. So you have an opportunity for a real change in Iran. We'll see if the people take to the streets over the next couple of weeks and decide to make a change. I mean, they stood against the Iranian regime when it had a navy, it had an air force, it had ballistic capabilities, it had a nuclear program, it had a ability to counter any type of aircraft that flew over their airspace. That stuff has completely been destroyed and shattered. Now it's a matter of whether or not they're willing to work. And another issue that I think people are not paying attention, we've always been focused on our near peer, China. Yesterday was a discussion that was taking place with the leadership from Taiwan and China. And I think the message was sent very clearly to the Chinese president that Taiwan is not for taking. Now, if you want to have a say, we'll negotiate on how much access you're going to have back into Iran, because you need Iran for your benefit. So there was a deal that was probably struck there, too, in negotiations that kind of told the Chinese, you know, you need to make a choice. You could have portions of Iran or Bazaar, especially, or you can have none of it. And Iran is part of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, signatorial, which is led by the Chinese Communist Party. And Russia is a signatorial to it, and I'm sure that they kind of understood where we're standing when it comes to what we're projecting for a global relationship with a near peer in the long term.
Well, Trump is certainly resetting the global political world right now, and I don't think that he's quite finished doing that. What's interesting to me is that regime change is necessary in order to ensure that we are secure from Iranians ever having a nuclear bomb. But that doesn't mean that we're doing nation building inside that. We're expecting the people to do that. I think that's what this 2-week pause is all about. It's about, like you said, the Iranian people coming to the streets, and this time having Trump having destroyed much of their internal political structure and many of their IRGC forces, hopefully having a successful discussion about actually new leadership.
No, it is. Look, and we couldn't allow the entire nation to fall apart and segmented. Look what happened. We send weapons to Iran. It was supposed to get to the opposition groups, to the Kurds, and the Kurds basically took it for themselves. And Trump stated, even in his discussion with the press, we knew how you were going to react. Unfortunately, we kind of gave you a opportunity to react differently than you are, and you did. Now, imagine if Iran had been split, or it can still split. We don't know what the outcome is going to be, but if it splits into segments where you have Kurds for themselves, the Baluchis for themselves, the Arabs for themselves, the Turkish Azeris for themselves, and those are just the major components, you're not going to be able to manage it. It will be a crisis for the globe. I think doing it this way is a pretty good fine line. Look, the Iranian people were taking to the streets demanding not their government to leave, but to say, we want you guys to make changes. We want you guys to give us the freedoms that others have. So if they were willing to take to the streets for that, and that's always been their motto and want and desire, and that is achieved by them, and if they are able to achieve what they want for the rights for the women, what they want for the rights for themselves to be able to be a part of a larger market, to be able to have a share and say with the global community, not just in the hands of the Ayatollahs and their handpicked cronies to make a profit out of the riches in Iran, then you achieve what you want for them, and you've been able to keep Iran intact, and you've been able to put Iran in a position that their leadership know that any given time they get out of line, they could end up dying. That's much easier to control that large 92 million persons community that is expanding every year, to include the fact that there's 20 million of those sitting in the IRGC and the Basiji bazaars that are tied to the Shanghai Cooperation Organization that have links all the way from China into Russia, into Africa, into Europe, into South America, even the United States. It's a much easier way to controlling that. And to do that on the modern warfare level that the U.S. has engaged in, where AI was a major component of our support, and not even using some of the weapons that we have that you use for our advantages if we wanted to, is a victory in the long term. But people have to separate their emotions of how they look at the current POTUS and just look at it from the reality. And I always tell them, stop consuming news that is coming from Iran, from Russia, from China. That's internal for their people, and you have to give them an opportunity to talk to their people because they have to manage them in the long term.
That's a great point. Thank you.
Well, you heard it on The Real Story, because that's what we do. We talk to people who have The Real Story. Thanks so much for joining us today, Lieutenant Colonel Sarja Sangari. He is the CEO of the Near East Center for Strategic Engagement, and we appreciate you. You also live in Illinois, which makes this very much a local story as well. Thank you so much, Sarges.
Anytime. I hope it helps.
Yeah, we'll be sure to have you back. All right, coming up on The Real Story, Moms for America, is motherhood servitude, Jeannie? We'll get the answer. You're listening to AM 560, The Answer.